Peter G. Peterson and that foundation, the year after it was founded, they were saying, the U.S. will never survive this $3 trillion debt that we're in, or this $10 trillion debt that we're in. Well, we're in $33 trillion worth of debt, and it does not seem to have screwed with us yet.
Hello, and welcome to the More Freedom Foundation podcast. We are your hosts. I am Rory McElhone. I do all the technical bits, and I am with author and political intriguer, Robert Morris.
I like that, intriguer. That's good. It's just the hoops you go through to avoid calling me an expert, as I've asked you to not call me an expert. I appreciate that. I do. I also appreciate it seems to make it's difficult for you every time, and I love it.
It'll get more and more convoluted each time, which I'm looking forward to.
Indeed.
So, I've heard you've recently got COVID. How are you feeling at the moment?
I'm actually better for the first time in a week, which is great. As annoying as it is to get COVID, I think I've gotten it. The timing has been pretty good because if I'd gotten it 3 or 4 days later, I'd have been missing family Thanksgiving with my beloved but somewhat elderly relations. I think I'm coming out of it in enough time that I should even be able to get in there on Wednesday and help set some stuff up. So
do you think you'll be able to enjoy Thanksgiving worrying about $32.6 trillion of debt?
It's funny because these numbers just constantly go up. The number I'm working with now is $33.6 trillion.
Okay, I'm working from August.
yeah, so this is just a mere 4 months later and there's another $1 trillion. It's funny, Rory. I just realized, we record these in sets of two, and today's recording is bringing me back to my 20s. You know, I feel like a conservative firebrand again. I was condemning a Democratic president in the first episode, and in the second episode, I'm going to be talking about the national debt.
And then after that, we'll be talking about why you love the Libertarian Party.
Of course, yeah, we're going to be going super libertarian. I don't know, maybe some personal responsibility politics or something like that. No, I have not, in fact, become a born-again libertarian. But these are issues, went after Joe Biden, I guess they'd say from the left. I would say from the context of a human being or a U.S. taxpayer who's unexcited about the 5,000 babies we killed in Palestine last month. And I'm talking about the national debt from the context of just basic good governance, which is certainly not Republican.
What is unique about the American debt?
I'd say its size, perhaps. I should have been comparative.
Well, the thing that always gets me is the fact it has to. Most countries can just sort of run up debt, and yes, it can be a political football or whatever, and one party might say it should be lower or whatever, but it can just sort of keep on going until there's a crisis. While America, does it have to vote on it every year to expand it?
So the debt ceiling was, introduced in my lifetime over the past, not more than half a century anyway, and was meant to be just kind of an administrative thing or a signpost or a reminder. But since in the Clinton administration, I know there were government shutdowns. I can't remember if the debt ceiling specifically was part of that process, but probably. During the Clinton administration, the Republicans, having shown a complete inability to exercise any kind of fiscal responsibility under any Republican administration, decided that they would start using the debt ceiling to make things harder for Democratic presidents. So the spectacle that we've seen over and over again when there are Democratic presidents is Republicans claiming they're going to refuse to allow a higher amount of debt to be taken out. And inevitably, they roll over. This happens every time. During the Obama administration, there were some actual serious attempts at deficit reduction. There were some serious attempts, I think it was sequestration or something. The Obama and the Republicans agreed that they should cut a bunch of social spending and also, believe it or not, the Pentagon budget for a series of years in real ways.
Did they have mustaches? Because they may be the bizarro versions of them from a parallel universe.
It's true. It's true. It's like Star Trek, multidimensional folks jumping in there.
exactly.
Entirely possible. It is kind of miraculous in the context of what we've been looking at for the past, most of the past decade, to realize that actually, in fact, in the teens, people did decide to cut defense spending at one point. And I think if U.S. politics hadn't been so deranged by Donald Trump, we'd be having a lot more serious conversations about doing the same thing now. The problem is that all the defense freaks have managed to sell themselves as resistance heroes to Trump. We don't talk about that sort of thing so much anymore. But yeah, they did actually manage to cut the deficit a little bit back then, and really not much since. And what has changed? I was in the Obama administration a big fiscal discipline guy and was really convinced that we were really at risk of driving the country off of a cliff. And then Trump became president, and then Biden became president, and all fiscal responsibility went out the window, specifically with COVID and the aftermath. In 1980, I looked at some of this. Ronald Reagan became president in part complaining about how high the national debt was. The national debt accumulated by 1980 over prior decades, probably still paying off some World War II debt at that point, was $3 trillion. In 2020, in 2021, deficit, the amount of money we did not spend, I believe in 2020, amounted to about $3 trillion. So in a single year, we added more to the national debt than had been existing in 1980, when supposedly we started talking about how important the national debt was. So my experience during the Obama administration, caring a lot about the national debt that was supposedly so terrible and was such a terrible thing for the United States, I watched it steadily mount from $20 trillion to, say, $27 trillion. And then in 2020, from 2019 to 2023, we instantly added like $6 trillion. Just like that. And there has not been any serious consequence. However, we are entering an environment with interest rates where the bill is finally going to come due. The kind of extraordinary thing that we've experienced for the entirety of this century, for the recent political life, if we had sensibly aged politicians in this country, it would be for the entire political life of most of the people running the country. But actually, it's only the last quarter of Biden's political life or something like that. But truly, to use the immortal words of George W. Bush Vice President Dick Cheney, deficits do not matter. They have not mattered for the United States government because interest rates have been so, so low for the entirety of the century. There was a brief moment. So there was even before 9/11, there was a financial crisis in the United States related to the dot-com crash. The first flush of internet companies drove up equity prices in the late 90s, early 2000s, and crashed, I think, across the year 2000. So interest rates were brought very low. And then 9/11 happened, and interest rates were maintained at a very low rate. I think the thing that was really happening was that Alan Greenspan was a Republican and George W. Bush, the president, was a Republican, and he was also trying to pay for these absurd wars that he wanted to do. So Greenspan kind of was like, hey, I'll just keep interest rates low, until even Alan Greenspan realized that horrible things were happening in the U.S. real estate market. Tried to jack it up briefly between 2006 and 2008. 2008, the world economy crashes, interest rates go back down to essentially zero. And that's where they sat. Actually, Janet Yellen, Democratic Fed chair, did not like Donald Trump and actually had the sound argument that the economy was going gangbusters and he was spending like a drunken soldier. So at the Fed, she did sort of step up interest rates, I think over a year and a half. And then 2020 happened and we went back to 0% interest rates. What has happened over the past, I guess, year and a half, 2 years now at this point, is that under Jerome Powell at the Federal Reserve, we have had interest rates steadily go up, and now we are in a situation where those rates are up and the economy is doing fine, inflation seems to be largely whipped, and those rates are not going to go down. So what that means is that the pennies that the Federal Reserve that the U.S. government was paying to borrow all this extra money, you know, if you have a deficit of $1 trillion every year, that's all just borrowed money. That means the Treasury Department is selling all of these debt securities. And for the entirety of this century, they could just do that for very little money, $100, maybe $200 billion a year in debt service. That is no longer the case. So we just finished, I guess in October, is finished the 2023 fiscal year for the federal government, where it was revealed that our deficit, the amount of money that we're adding to the debt this year, was $1.7 trillion.
So that's a full Apple and half of Microsoft every year in just interest?
Well, no, that's not interest. So that's the total deficit. So okay. The total deficit, so everything that we're spending that we're not paying for is $1.7 trillion. So the annual revenues of the U.S. government, I think in 2023, were $4.4 trillion, and the expenditure was $6.1 trillion. So that gets to about $1.7 trillion. That's the deficit, and that just gets added to the national debt. This interest rate shift, so the average rate, U.S. government is constantly borrowing money. There's a variety of different kinds of debt securities that the U.S. government sells. We've got T-bills and treasury bills, treasury bonds, treasury notes. The bills are all less than a year. You've got some of those are just for 3 months. The treasury bonds are 20 or 30 years, and the notes are like 2, 3, 5, 7, or 10 years. The interest rate that the treasury commits to pay is dramatically influenced by where the Fed puts interest rates. It has to be a little bit higher than that. In 2021, before the interest rates started going up, the interest rate that the government was paying on average across all of the debt that it had taken out was 1.61%. The aggregate now is most of 3%. And everything new that they add on, so every month there's a whole bunch of 30-year treasury bonds that are expired. Well, I guess at this point, so that'd be a 30-year from now, would have been like 1993. And interest rates there were already coming down. So, you know, they have to pay off that, and then they have to replace it with a 30-year bond at a 5% interest rate. So every month that goes by, the amount of money that the federal government has to spend on just paying the interest on the debt goes up because this stuff is constantly rolling over. So in 2021, the amount of interest that the U.S. government was paying, and keep in mind, this is right after during a lot of the COVID expenditure. So this was already quite high. The interest was $352 billion. So that's how much interest, just interest, that the U.S. government was paying. In 2022, it went from $352 billion to $476 billion. And in 2023, out of that $1.7 trillion, almost the entirety of that $0.7 trillion was just interest payments. So that's $659 billion that the U.S. government is paying. Now, I am not some like crisis guy. I'm not someone like, oh, everything's going to fall apart. Blah, blah, blah. We could absolutely continue on like this for another 5 or 6 years without changing a thing. And the numbers would just get bigger and bigger and things would just sort of keep going and going and going. But eventually it would all break.
The thing I've noticed is you can create whatever narrative you want mm-hmm. based on other countries with a similar amount. So if you want to make the argument having a low debt level compared to GDP, you could say, oh, look at Kazakhstan. It's only at 20%. That's terrible. And then if you want to make it a good thing, you could then talk about Switzerland. And then you can do the opposite. So I think there's an argument that if the Treasury holds on to money, it's not being spent in the economy. You know, it's sort of like water. A lot of people see money as like a vital necessity. So if you're hoarding it, it's not going out into the populace. So you can look at other countries then. If you want to make it out to be a good thing, you can use countries like, well, Japan is the crazy one, which is 200% of its GDP. And then you'll have the likes of Spain's about 100. Portugal's very similar to America at 118. America's roughly 110% of its GDP. So I feel like you can mix and match and make whatever story you'd like, depending on whatever countries you want to pick and go, ooh, that's a spooky poor country. They have X amount. And I think, well, each country is unique and, you know, its debt levels will affect it in its own way and why it's got to that level. But I think you have to realize that America does, it makes the world economy, so it's making it itself. Whatever happens is it's got so many more levers to pull that it can get away with this carry-on.
I think it can get away with this carry-on for much longer than we like, but why? The thing is, we have so many levers at our control that can make this look much, much more reassuring and like not as problematic and not as terrifying. We did it during the Clinton administration. We had a balanced budget and actually started working down the national debt. I think the United States, I think there's a lot in the world financial system that simply doesn't work if the United States does not have a massive national debt. But we are reaching a point where the layers of illusion and weirdness and strangeness are not necessarily functioning. Like, I am confident that the economists of the Federal Reserve can like come up with some kind of reason to keep everything sustainable forever, but I don't think that should be enough to convince us that we don't have to cover the costs of what we're doing. I think it just
roughly World War II levels. It seems that was about 104%.
Yeah, it's just
but it has just gone crazy since 2006. It was at what, 35%, and it's just shot up. Obviously, COVID went from 80% to 100%, and it's kind of stayed around there. It is just staggering what's happened in what it feels to me not a long time.
And there are very likely going to be periods of mass expenditure to come that we're going to want to be able to do. The next pandemic, larger climate crisis. Washington, D.C., it's obviously something I'd rather we didn't do, but Washington, D.C. is in a constant crusade to start a larger war with China. Our fiscal positioning is just, it's a mess. And what happens is things break. Things continued to break. And because I think the work of Adam Tooze talking about first the 2008 crisis, and then I think he wrote a smaller book about the 2020 crisis, and just the ways that the financial system broke down entirely, and the Federal Reserve threw out the rule book enough in both 2008 and 2020 to sort of come in and just sort of handle it. But that's not very democratic. That's not very sane. And this sort of abandonment of any kind of basic framework for how our government works with democratic control to a bunch of rich guys, very smart rich guys, who I think have done, like, I don't dislike Jerome Powell, the current head of the Federal Reserve, a bunch of smart rich guys who have done incredible work to keep the world financial system from collapsing during the pandemic and stuff like that. But they're also, like, doing a lot of things for their own benefit. And it's not even necessarily consciously corrupt. They're just like, well, you know, I had to make myself and all my friends fabulously wealthy to keep the world economy from falling apart. I'm not even saying corruption. Like, that just sort of is how things happen to work. And I think that we're becoming more and more at the mercy of the Federal Reserve and relying on this idea that we're always going to have somebody who's really savvy and calm and not exclusively looking out for his own benefit, like Jerome Powell there. I mean, you can argue that a lot of why the 2008 financial crisis was so incredibly damaging is because we had a Ayn Rand fanatic running the Federal Reserve. I was on Wall Street around the turn of the century, spent a couple summers there, and the godlike respect for Alan Greenspan, the chair of the Federal Reserve in those years, is impossible to overemphasize. I mean, he was resented in some circles, but he was, you know, he was just seen as this magician who knew how the economy worked. And that level of trust saw the world economy almost drive off a cliff entirely. And I think this idea that, well, I guess deficits don't really matter and some smart guy at the Fed will always figure it out has been true so far. But man, is that not a great thing to rely upon, especially if you believe that there's some kind of multipolar world coming. I don't believe that there's some kind of multipolar world coming, but it's important. It is important to balance the books occasionally.
What countries own a lot of America's debt?
This was a huge obsession in the Obama administration, and I don't think people focus on it much anymore, because before 2008, we still lived in a world where the Federal Reserve pretended that it only did certain things and it wouldn't do certain things. The question now, Russia was a huge owner of U.S. securities and debt and whatnot, and after 2014 said, no, we're done, and just dropped most of it as quickly as they could, and the market absorbed it. The great horror panic idea is that China would drop everything to stop buying U.S. securities. And I think they have largely stopped buying U.S. securities, but they still sit on an immense pile of it. But I think the general sense at this point was if China tried to manipulate the market by selling off all of its U.S. securities, the Federal Reserve would just buy them, you know, print money and buy them, and it would have no actual effect. I think the Japanese and the Chinese governments are probably the biggest owners of U.S. securities, biggest foreign owners of U.S. securities. But I think they own a lot less than they used to. I think that looked a lot more systemically important and whatnot.
Because I've heard one of the unique things about Japan, which is a 200%, is Japan owes the money to itself.
Yeah.
So it's not really that bad. And is that something America can kind of rely on, that it owes a lot of this money to itself?
Yeah, I think that we've, through very different things, I think in Japan, it's really, it's the retail investor, the wholesale folks own a lot of Japanese debt as like a patriotic thing, and it's sustainable that way. I think the Federal Reserve itself owns a ton of the debt securities issued by the Treasury Department in the United States. So it's different somehow, but it is, yes, taking on that. I think that we were a lot more worried about the prospect of or the threat of foreign ownership of U.S. debt in the pre-2008 period, before the Federal Reserve basically was like, we're going to do whatever we need to do, and we have essentially unlimited toolbox to do that. And Congress was like, I'm not real sure how money works. You go do that. And that's sort of been the status quo we've been living on since 2008. That became extreme, you know, and driven to an extreme in 2020. And I'm not someone who like hates the Fed. I do think auditing the Fed's not a terrible idea. But like, it's not very democratic the way things are set up right now. And I think a key part of getting back to what we recognize as reality is trying. We're never going to balance the, I mean, maybe at some point we'd be able to balance the budget. But we should at least make an effort at that, reduce the deficit, try to knock down the debt a bit, which I think is actually entirely possible, entirely within our capacities, and then would allow actually paying our bills, I believe, would reintroduce some democracy into the system, which is now just sort of completely like, the wizards will figure it out. Just, I don't think that's good for democracy or good for government going forward.
Are you aware of the Peter G. Peterson Foundation?
Yes, I am aware of the Peter G. Peterson Foundation and controversies around it.
Oh, because just when I'm researching this, a lot of what's coming up is there. Basically, the national debt is $33 trillion and growing. It's all very scary, and what we can do to bring this down. And I'm just curious, who are they and why do they care about the U.S. national debt?
Peter D. Peterson, I believe, is like a hedge fund guy. He's a rich Wall Street guy. I'm not sure if he's still with us, but...
And why I'm trying to get people focused on these long-term debts is we're spending almost no time on the long-term. We're forgetting the long-term, and yet the long-term is going to be there. The current path is simply impossible.
And I think what's important is, like, for those of you who may be new to the subject of, you may be dabbling in light deficit hawkery for the first time, is that Peter G. Peterson and folks who've been pushing what Peter G. Peterson pushes have been spectacularly wrong over and over and over again. Peter G. Peterson and that foundation was putting forward really alarmist, I don't know when it was founded, but the year after it was founded, they were saying, the U.S. will never survive this $3 trillion debt that we're in, or this $10 trillion debt that we're in. Well, we're in $33 trillion worth of debt, and it does not seem to have screwed with us yet. So I'm not some kind of fundamentalist about this. I used to be. Like I think I did a short apologizing to Paul Krugman because I spent a lot of the other in blog posts that nobody ever read complaining about Paul Krugman, how he was insane and trying to kill America by talking about whether there should be more deficit spending. To be clear, during the Obama administration, when the Federal Reserve is giving you, giving the federal government the opportunity to borrow money for nothing, which is what they did throughout the Obama years, then the federal government should probably borrow more, because if interest rates are zero, that means that economic activity is too slow. And you want actually some inflation in that context. So during, you know, I was wrong. I was with Peter G. Peterson in 2000, in the 2000s during the Obama administration saying, oh, we should spend less, spend less, spend less. And the big lesson of the Trump administration is that actually spending like a drunken sailor got the economy back to health for the first time since 2008. But you do that for a bit and then you stop. And now we're at a point where unemployment in the United States is staggeringly low. Inflation is something that we're worried about. This is a point where we can actually stop spending so much freaking money. When we keep not. And actually, one way of attacking inflation is to raise taxes. Raising taxes is a really good...
I was listening to a thing on the BBC about this, and that was the radical solution they came up with was slightly increasing taxes could actually bring this down pretty quickly.
Yeah. And also...
I've seen it broken down that with this Peter G. Peterson Foundation, that it's roughly about $100,000 per American, which obviously most Americans don't have that, but a lot of Americans do have something similar to that. And, you know, if taxation would seem to bring it down to much more manageable levels.
And it's, and again, we don't have to wipe out the $33 trillion debt.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't think
any country has like zero. There's a lot of like, you know, no data, but I think Norway's particularly low at 13%. So, yeah, you're not wiping it out completely. You're just sort of reducing it to maybe 80%.
Yeah. back to where it was before COVID, which we could do actually fairly easily over the course of a decade. Friday, November 10th, Moody's, one of the ratings agencies, downgraded U.S. government debt. And that's meaningless, frankly, because it's U.S. government debt and a lot of people are sort of statutorily required to continue purchasing it. But that's kind of nerve-wracking. If the United States wouldn't even have to reduce government debt, if the United States were to simply balance the budget for a couple of years, or maybe just reduce the deficit to a couple $100 billion for a couple of years, Moody's would reverse that downgrade. I'm almost certain. Like, it's so little what we have to do to start introducing a little more sanity. And you start introducing a little more sanity into the system, then the virtuous cycles continue. Interest rates will fall. And if we did not have, you know, I Just for context, this 1.7 trillion deficit here that we experienced this year, the first year of Trump, I was outraged, absolutely blew my mind that after Obama tried to reduce the deficit every year, Trump came into power in a period of relative economic success and instantly jumped the deficit up to $1 trillion. I mean, that was a huge scandal for me, for lots of people. People were constantly talking about it. And now Biden has almost doubled that deficit in a period of great economic success where there's no real reason for government to be stepping in with all that demand. And it doesn't seem like anybody's really talking about it. And I think we mostly mock the Republicans when they try to do their government shutdowns, and we should, because this last set of shutdowns, they're like, we're not going to cut anything that costs money. If we defund Ukraine and like the National Endowment of the Arts, which is like less than a drop in the bucket. I need to nail these numbers down, but I think grand total, the United States has given Ukraine still something under $100 billion. The interest payments in 2023 alone were almost seven times that. This is not like Ukraine is not something that's breaking the bank here.
But it's also, isn't it still costing less than Afghanistan was? And nobody really seemed to want to end that to balance the budget?
I think Ukraine has definitely cost more than Afghanistan did year by year, for sure. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody made the argument, well, like at the height of at the height of the Afghanistan surge, oh, for sure, that cost a lot more. But I think that the amount of money we are spending in Ukraine should absolutely not be what we're spending in Ukraine for the next 10 years.
But also America is basically doing what it normally does during war, which is charge everything at the most it possibly can. So
of course.
I think things like if it donates a Humvee, what the way America would do it is they generally would upgrade it. So they're charging the price of a brand new, recently upgraded Humvee, when in reality, this is like 20 years old.
Yeah, no, we are not.
So there's stuff like that where it's like, oh, we're donating this much, when in reality, it's like, no, they're really only worth this.
Sure. There's endless corruption in what we do. I don't think that we need to abandon Ukraine, but I do think some reformulation of how much we're spending there, as it's now becoming clear, it's going to be a decade-long commitment rather than a year or two.
But something you've always strived for, which is just less spending on the U.S. military in general, less of these incredibly expensive projects that go nowhere. Is that something you would like to see?
Absolutely. But I did bring up just that Republican thing is like, I think the main coverage of the debt, the national debt and the deficit now, seems to be mocking the Republicans for bringing up the issue. I think their complete lack of proposed solutions or sensible proposed solutions is worth mocking, but it is an issue worth bringing up. The numbers that run the country are important, and we're living in a, I don't actually believe that fundamentally, like, the government should be run like a household and money coming in and money going out.
Oh yeah, that's
complete
nonsense.
That's complete nonsense. But we're living in a place of complete unreality, and that's not good either. You mentioned the Humvees, where it's like, oh, well, this crappy broken down Humvee, we're going to sell you for $250,000 because we can, because we're the government, because none of the numbers mean anything. And I think that culture of none of the numbers actually meaning anything is pernicious. And yes, government is fantasy land. Yes, all of life is to some extent fantasy land, and we make up the rules. But
we are imaginations of ourselves.
Exactly. But you need rules. You need rules. And I think that's the problem. Part of the problem in the United States right now, and government generally, is that the rules are not being followed. People don't even know what the rules are. And I think that attempting to get some of this debt stuff a little more in tune with an agreed version of reality would be a really good idea.
What is the closest agreement to reality that we're seeing on the horizon?
I don't think,
from basically saying, it's your fault.
I think that, yes, that is it. That is the agreement, to blame the other side. And
it's the blue team or the red team?
Yeah, the problem is that throughout the Obama administration, it was the Democrats are in power. Part of this is Republicans forcing them into, you know, doing the pain. And part of it was legitimate concern in the Obama administration. Yeah, the budget matters. We care about this. They were really concerned about the amount of debt that China owned and Japan owned, and they really wanted to work on that. I don't see that in the Biden administration. I don't see any real serious attempts to do anything about the deficit. There's one of the articles that I read. It's like, well, you know, Biden made a, you know, proposed something that would have cut would have cut $25 billion a year. And that's as far as it went. And that's all it is. I think there's a complete lack of seriousness about this in Washington, D.C. from either political party, because they've been taught that they don't have to be serious. The Obama folks tied themselves in knots, limited their policy aspirations in order to try and do something about the deficit. And then Trump solved the U.S. economy by spending too much money as soon as he got into power. And Democrats are like, A, what Trump did seemed to work. B, just sick of what they did during the Clinton administration and the Obama administration. It was like being like the good parent and coming in and cleaning up the mess after the drunken mess of the Reagan and Bush administrations. And I think the problem is we do need some attempt to reassert reality. And I think what you've got with the ratings agencies here makes it clear that we're falling off the beam a little bit too much. The thing is, it wouldn't be that hard to make a serious impact on this budget. Trump's corporate tax, which Trump instantiated a bunch of tax cuts that were, I think, kind of universally a terrible idea, considering how well the economy was already doing at that point. They just made the whole deficit situation that much worse. But $75 billion a year, right then, just go back to the corporate tax rates of the Obama administration. And you're going to have very little political resistance at this point. I don't think many Republicans would be that angry if you jacked up the corporate tax rates. The Peter Peterson Foundation might be super angry.
Are they doing it in a sense to bet against the markets? Like, is that their main reason, is so that Peter Peterson people can make money out of it?
I think Peter Peterson, I think he is affiliated with some storied financial institution, but I just can't remember the details right now. I think he's well retired.
He's passed on in 2018.
But I think they legitimately believe that deficits matter.
It wasn't just we're planning on making a load of money by betting against the government or something like that.
No, it's a foundation. I mean, I'm sure that there's always somebody betting against the government. That's part of the joys of markets. I think the conventional wisdom, really up until the 2008 and 2020 experiences, was that there really was a point at which, whether you were crowding out private sector investment or you would just lose the credibility of the markets, where the national debt would get too high and you'd have some kind of disaster situation. And I'm not entirely convinced that that's wrong. I think that there has to be a variety of, you know, perhaps a perfect storm of sorts of lack of credibility, a deranged politicians in the Congress who don't understand that debt ceiling's a bad idea, then a bunch of geopolitical kerfluffles, and maybe some kind of, you know, like, perfect storms that we're already seeing are easily imaginable. And if you just add like another two or three details to one of them, then perhaps we would be in a situation where this deficit and the national debt was a horrific, horrific problem. So why not resolve it? It wouldn't be that hard. Raise some taxes. It's not going to be this, you know, horrific. It's not impossible. It's something we're very capable of.
Do you just think this is something Biden's scared of? Because it's sort of like the classic thing Democrats do, which is, you know, raise taxes more than the Republicans, and then it can be used as, look, you've destroyed everything.
Yeah, I think Biden...
You've slightly raised taxes.
Yeah, I think Biden has always been like, oh, we're going to raise taxes on the super rich, and it doesn't even do that because Republicans stop it. I think Clinton definitely, and Obama was more... were more willing to actually successfully raise taxes than Biden has. Because, again, Biden's like, F it. Why should I do it? Republicans never do it. Which is an argument that I think has some weight to it, but I do think sets us up for a potentially quite catastrophic situation, or just a situation where things make less and less sense and a bunch of rich bankers have to figure out more and more for us. And I think a lot of people would say now that rich bankers deciding what our reality is for the past 15 years has worked out really well for the top 20% of the country and really quite crappily for the other 80%. So I'm getting deficit hawkery curious, Rory, is what I'm saying. You know, it's returning, going back, but back, what's that Bugs Bunny meme? It's like, I'm going back to the old me, you know, but again, I'm not, you know, I don't think we actually need to sacrifice that much. I think we just need to pay a little bit more tax.
Do you think it's annoying that the Republicans are the ones that seem to create the most fuss about the debt, but they're the least likely to A, reduce the military, or B, increase taxes that would actually help reduce the debt?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. They at least used to. And of course, we savaged Robert Gates a couple episodes back for being the kind of old school guy who was like, well, we need to reform the entitlements. We need to take money out of Social Security and Medicare so we can afford all these beautiful new nuclear weapons. And that at least was a little, there was some actual commitment to the idea that there should be a balanced budget. People really believed that there needed to be a balanced budget before 2008. That's George H.W. Bush, the first Bush in the late 80s, early 90s, ended his presidency because he raised taxes, because he thought the deficit was getting out of control. Yeah, I mean, people used to believe in this sort of thing. It was a shared reality that once existed and no longer does.
What sort of shock would have to happen for the Republican Party to believe that this does matter and that something should actually be done instead of just a political football?
Well, I don't know if anything could get through to the Republicans, because they'd just be like, look what Biden did. Quite literally, the Capitol building could be burning down around them, and this crew would rather try to find a way to blame the Democrats. But I do think, for like clarity, I don't quite understand this, and I just get such differing interpretations of this, but my understanding is it's beginning to become a little more challenging to auction off some chunks of U.S. debt. It always gets sold, but it's not as straightforwardly easy. The interest rates sometimes have to be uncomfortably a little bit higher. Do not quote me on any of that. I am not familiar at all with the incredibly arcane process of the Treasury Department going to the market every week and selling a whole bunch of debt securities. I've read some interpretations of that that say that's crazy talk. It's all going fine. I don't know. The repo market, which is the, I think, overnight banking is market that's mostly between the Federal Reserve and the too big to fail banks, that helps to determine what the federal funds, it's the mechanism through which the Federal Reserve sets the interest rates. I've seen some indication that it's been faulty. In 2019, famously, it kind of started hiccuping in very weird ways, and the Federal Reserve just sort of stepped in and fixed it somehow. And we're already getting indications that things aren't working the way that they're supposed to. Banks aren't as interested. Certainly foreign governments are nowhere near as interested in holding U.S. debt as they used to be. They still hold, I think, literally trillions of dollars of it, but they're not buying any new ones, and they're sort of letting it mature. I think there already are a lot of those signs, Rory, that things are getting too complicated, but because it's money and it's all made up, smart financial people have sort of put Band-Aids on top of it, and I think it's entirely possible, I don't know, that really this is Band-Aids trying to keep the Hoover Dam together, and it's all going to explode at some point. It's also entirely possible that we can just continue adding Band-Aids forever because it's all invented. I just don't know, but I do feel like the potential risk of some kind of collapse here exists. And it would be smart to replace some of those Band-Aids with mortar and drain a little bit of the water.
So I know I was saying you can just sort of pick countries that you know you like their levels of debt and then use that as your argument. But just to give an idea, it would seem America is in maybe the top 20 of debt. So yeah, you have Japan up there at 200 because it's just, you know, Japan, then Greece at 190. So it doesn't seem that common to have close to about 100, and then you have a lot that are a lot less. So just to give you an idea, it's still quite high for the world averages, despite the likes of China and stuff don't give us very good ideas of what they're up to. So, and also the fact that it's such a, you know, America's so important for the world economy. If it does get it wrong catastrophically, the whole world will suffer.
Well, for sure. But it's also because we are so central to the world economy, we can get away with it. You know, the exorbitant privilege.
Or you'll suffer the least, weirdly, even though it's your problem, if that makes any sense.
Well, we saw that already in 2008. It's a lot depends on the U.S. financial system, and the U.S. financial system in every particular is underpinned by U.S. government debt. One of the reasons why U.S. government debt is so, the markets for U.S. government debt are so liquid is that most of the large banks in the country, and I think in much of the world, are required to buy U.S. government debt because it's rated in such a way that only really the U.S. government is rated. It's not, I think there's a lot of people with these sort of once including myself with these sort of libertarian Bitcoin fantasies that, oh, it's all going to collapse and it'll be for the better for humanity. And no, it won't.
won't. All revolutions are quite horrendous for most people.
Yeah.
In the immediate aftermath.
Yeah. I'm here to tell you that your chateau in Portugal and your computer money are not going to save you if the U.S. financial system collapses. On that bright note.
Let's just hope America keeps on trucking and maybe spends a little less on its military.
That'd be nice. Spend a little less on its military, spend a little less on giving money to prescription drug companies. Maybe, you know, maybe the weight loss drugs save us. There's so many things that could go right. And it'd just be nice if we had more people in government who were looking into how to make those things go right, instead of just assuming they can continue to kick the can down the road for decade upon decade upon decade.
Which it looks like we may have to find out the hard way, because I don't see anyone with any actual ideas to implement change.
Not yet, Rory, not yet.
The More Freedom Foundation is also available on YouTube and TikTok. Rob's Twitter is Rob O'Law, and he's also written a book called Avoiding the British Empire: What It Was and How the US Can Do Better. And music provided by Kevin MacLeod.